Hi, this is Roger Marsh for Family Talk with some exciting news. We've selected 18 of the most popular broadcasts of the past year and present them to you together on 6 audio CDs in the 2016 Family Talk Best of Broadcast Collection. Join Dr. Dobson and many incredible guests like Anne Graham Lotz, Dr. Robert Jeffers, and Eric Metaxas in this compelling audio collection. You can get your CD set as our thank you for a suggested donation of $50 or more to support Family Talk. Your gift today will be doubled by a generous matching grant. Join Dr. Dobson and serving families by calling 877-732-6825 or visit drjamesdobson.org.
Hi, this is Joe Silverio. I'm on staff here at Family Talk, and I just want to thank our listeners and greet you guys. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year and Maligayang Pasko.
Today on Family Talk.
Well, hello and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk with your host, psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Roger Marsh, and today we are re-airing Dr. Dobson's conversation with Julie Woodley. Julie survived years of horrible abuse and the pain of abortion, but in her darkest hours, God reached out to her, and now she lives to help others find the same healing path. Dr. Meg Meeker joined them for this amazing conversation, which is part of our 2016 Best of the Best broadcast series. If you missed any part of the program yesterday, I urge you to go to our website and listen to it right there. You'll be inspired and encouraged by what God has done in Julie's life. Now, before we get started, let me remind you once again that some of the stories that we'll hear today may not be suitable for our youngest listeners, so you may want to distract them from this broadcast. And now let's listen in to find out more about how Julie Woodley is helping others to find healing and restoration on today's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Julie, we want to talk in more detail about your story. It's a fascinating but deeply disturbing story about your early childhood. And we can't go back and redo what we did last time, but you can summarize it for us. Mm-hmm. What was your childhood like?
My childhood was filled with a lot of pain, pain of sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse.
From how early?
From before kindergarten, as far back as I can remember, the abuse started. And so it was filled with a lot of trauma. Mm.
Your dad would come into your room at night. You had a brother. Was he somewhere near?
He was in the bedroom next to me, and when
did he not hear this?
I don't know.
Maybe he didn't want to hear it.
Maybe he didn't want to hear it. Maybe he didn't know what to do to protect me. And he was also being abused. So he was probably just trying to preserve himself.
Boy, that was one chaotic family.
Yes.
At home.
Yeah.
What kind of dad did you have? What was he like? Why would he do such horrible things to you? Do you know? What was his childhood like? I always want to look and see what the perpetrator went through when he or she was young. Did that happen as far as you know?
I don't quite know a lot about his childhood. I know that he had a brother that died before he was born, and he was kind of the golden boy. He was pretty spoiled, and so he was kind of the prince, probably became a narcissist, honestly, at a very young age. But when I look back and, you know, have done my studying in mental illness and mental health issues, I look back and I think that he was definitely a sociopath. Yeah. He got a power on when he would hurt me. Mm-hmm. And it made him hurt me more. When he'd see blood, mm-hmm. he would hurt me more.
So when he sexually abused you, he was also damaging you physically?
He was beating me. Yes,
he beat you while he abused you.
Not while he was abusing me. That was more, this is the way I'm going to show you I love you. Mm. But if I did things wrong, like if I didn't stack the wood right or I didn't clean up the kitchen like he thought, then he would beat me.
So he beat you as punishment, but sexually abused you as his way, he told you, of showing love.
Yes, right.
So in your mind, those probably were two different things.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. This is daddy trying to show, because you believe your dad.
Right. Yep.
When you're a little, when you're five or six or seven.
Yeah.
Yes.
Did you reach out to him despite what he was doing to you? Did your need for love and a relationship between a little girl and her father, did you continue to need him and try to get his attention?
I did. I still loved him.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
A father doing something so wrong and so evil that all of the universe groaned with what she was going through.
And I just remember, that's a great question. I just remember even when they were just so horrible to me, I remember finding little ways to give to them. And what I used to do is I used to, when the wildflowers would come out, I'd make little baskets of flowers and I'd go present them to them. Or I used to make dandelion necklaces for my mother. And
Julie, that absolutely breaks my heart.
So I
kept think of this little girl going out there picking flowers for the people that were hurting you and damaging you and putting you through all this misery. And you're out there trying to make them happy.
That's the heart of a child, too. And I think that's important for fathers to hear out there, is that, you know, your daughters and your sons have a need for you that's so great. It even comes through terrible, terrible abuse, because you still want your dad in hope that there is some good there, and you want to connect on a healthy, loving way, and you bring them flowers.
You have written a book that I think is just outstanding called Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters.
Yes.
And in there, I quoted it in my book, Bringing Up Girls, about how, speaking to fathers, your little girls watch every move you make.
Every move.
You have more influence on them than anybody else.
And dads have an authority in a daughter's eyes with a capital A. They're huge for good and ill. She needs and wants goodness from her dad somewhere, somehow.
You crave it.
And it's a craving. Her self-esteem hangs precariously on her relationship with that dad.
Exactly. And if your dad says you're beautiful and you're smart and you're strong, that's who you are. But if your dad tells you that you're dumb and you're this and you're that, that's who you are. And so you take those words, you take his facial expressions, you take his body language, his mannerisms, and you pull that into you, and you integrate that into the person that you believe you are.
And this little girl, Julie Woodley, not only didn't get that kind of love and affirmation from her father, but he beat her regularly and then sexually abused her. I mean, it overwhelms me.
That's how you shatter a soul. That's how you shatter a soul. Is that a fair statement, Julie?
Yes. I think in every single way he tried to shatter me, and the words, the actions, all of that. But I also look back and see that God put a grandmother in my life. My grandmother, she was this little woman. It was my mother's mother, and she's about 4'8" and just a ball of love. My grandma, when she would talk about herself, she would say, she'd say, "I may not be very pretty and I may not be very smart, but Julie, I can love better than anyone."
Talk about a lifeline.
Lifeline. And that's what it was. She loved me extravagantly. And I was like a little baby duck. I watched her. I watched her mannerisms. I watched everything that she was about. And honestly, even as a little girl, I knew I did not want to be like those people I was raised with. I wanted to be like her. Every part of me wanted to be just like my grandma.
Did she know what you were going through?
I think she did know. In fact, later on, she did admit it, but she didn't know what to do. Didn't know what to do. She just couldn't wrap her head around it.
It's scary for everybody.
Yes.
I mean, you can get killed doing things like that, telling on them.
So I think she overcompensated with all this incredible love that she gave me.
Well, thank God for it.
Yes.
When did she die? I assume she's gone.
She died. She made all these amazing love gifts to me. you know, every spring she would make me a white dress, and she'd dress me up in this white dress, and she'd take me out the base of the mountains, and she'd dance with me over and over. I love you. I love you. She'd take me in and make all these amazing dishes, you know, and feed me. And then she'd sing to me and over, I love you. I love you. I'm praying for you. And then she died. Actually, she said, Julie, it's funny, but she said, I'm going to live until you get married and have a baby. And she did right after I had my first child. She died.
All right. Let's go now to that chapter of your life, because when you graduated from high school, you ran away, didn't you?
I left. It was right after I had an abortion a year before. Now, it was such a crazy time in my life. I was very promiscuous then, but my father was still, you know, this man that raised me, was still sexually abusing me. I didn't know if it was from him. I didn't know who I got pregnant from. But all I knew was that they wanted me to abort this baby. They were adamant that I abort this baby. And so they took me to Spokane, Washington, and that abortion, I felt like, just sucked my soul right out of me.
Yeah, you know, the feminists talk about women's rights, and it's their right to do what they will with their own baby. So many girls get abortions at a time like that because they are forced to by their parents.
And they're duped. Nobody really tells these young girls what is going to happen and how they're going to feel afterwards and the shame and the guilt and the remorse and the pain. You know, nobody tells them that. They go, here's the quick fix. You have to do it. Your life can just pick up and move on afterwards. And it does not work that way. You know, and I think that being pro-life means being pro-life for the mother as well.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and we have to help spare these mothers from that kind of pain.
Well, you had two abortions. How many have you had?
Two. I had two abortions, yes.
And these were because you were just sleeping with everybody.
Well, I want to tell you when I decided I needed to leave. My home became so violent that I thought, I have to get out of here. He continually threatened me with guns. And I thought, I have to get out of here. So I made a vow that I was going to save a small amount of money and I was going to leave the day after I graduated from high school. So I did. I saved up this money. And at that point in my life, because the violence was so bad, about a month before I graduated, I left and went to a girlfriend's home just to get away from the violence, but was still very afraid. I thought, he's going to come in. He's going to bring his gun in. He's going to hurt me. So I didn't tell anybody, and I left the day after I graduated from high school. I walked about, I don't know, a mile and a half, 2 miles to the train there in that little mountain town, and I hopped on that train, didn't tell anybody, and left.
You know, I've already mentioned that I served on the Attorney General's Commission on Pornography, but I actually served on 8 of these commissions. And it was a difficult assignment, but I learned an awful lot. And one of the commissions that I was on dealt with young people who are on the street and how they got there and what happens to them when they arrive. In the typical situation that you were in, and I don't know if this happened to you, but the typical thing that happens is they get on a bus or a train, they go to a big city, they get off, we'll say, the bus, hit the bus station, and there are pimps in there waiting for them. And they don't have any money, and they're hungry. They might be cold. They don't have a place to sleep. And these guys come up to them and are really nice to them, put their arm around them and say, I will take care of you. Come to my house. And they get them there, and then they are, for many years, they are captured. They're drugged. They become street women, you know, they're prostitutes, and horrible things happen to them. I'm telling you, I've seen those women and what they go through. They don't live very long. Typically, 30 is late in life for them. Now, I don't know if this happened to you, but so you arrive in a city. Did anybody come up to you like that?
They didn't come up to me, but I ended up kind of prostituting myself because I needed a place to stay. I needed food. I needed to survive. But, you know, I didn't even have enough self-esteem, honestly, to ask for money. So I just went from man to man and lived that way for about 5 years. I moved 25 times in 5 years.
Did you have a pimp?
I did not. No.
That's really unusual.
Yes, it's very unusual because now I do work. Actually, I do some work as a volunteer therapist in clubs.
Yeah.
So I understand that world. But it was unusual that I did not have that happen.
Where did you live? Where did you stay?
When I had somebody that would take me in, a man, I would stay there. Or I lived on the street once in a while. Wherever I could find a place to sleep, I would live there.
Mm. Julie, what a life.
Yeah.
That you have lived.
Yeah.
Were you ever in danger out there?
Oh, yes.
That,
I was in
that
danger.
That is such a dangerous world.
Many times. By the grace of God, I didn't die. Actually, part of my story is that I had a really good friend. Her and I partied together, and she did die. She was murdered. Mm-hmm. And that just...
This was the one that person you were close to.
That I was close to. Mm. Yeah, her name was Becky, and she would take my face and she'd look at it. She said, "We're looking for something together." And I would think, yeah, you were looking for another party. We're looking for another guy. But yeah, she was murdered.
Was she a prostitute too?
No, she mainly did a lot of drugs.
Wow.
Mm. My addiction was more sexual. Hers was more drug addiction.
You did not get into drugs?
A little bit. Not as much as she did. I didn't do heroin. I'd smoke some dope, that kind of things. But I did not get, addicted to drugs.
Well, that's another thing that's unusual for you because those girls are drugged by the pimp.
Yes.
And also threatened. Mm-hmm. If you don't do this, he's making his money from her.
Yep.
If you don't do what I tell you, I will kill you.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Julie, there's a beautiful turn in your story. One of my favorite words in scripture is but.
Hmm.
And I'm seeing this big but in your B-U-T because you had this horrible, horrible, horrible life, but, and yet, God came and did some miraculous work.
Hmm.
When did that happen? When did that start?
Well, as I was talking about my friend being murdered, she had just been murdered. I just had a second abortion. My life was an incredible mess. And I had this special night all set up for when I would commit suicide. Mm. I had the bottle of pills. I was in a rooming house then. I had a little bit of money, so I had a little rooming house. The bottles were in the medicine cabinet. Everything was set. I was going to take my life. And I did like to drink wine, but that night I didn't have a bottle of wine and I didn't have a guy. And I hit my pain. And I say I hit my pain. It's like full force. I didn't have anything to numb it. And I just hit it and started crying and crying. And I thought, this is my special night where I'm going to take my life. And so that night I just paced back and forth from the medicine cabinet to my bed. And I had long fingernails, and I just dug my fingernails into my hands until they just bled. And I finally just cried out to God, and I said, "No, help me. Help me, God." And I took that bottle of pills, and I threw it in the waste paper basket. Mm. And I fell back on my bed, and I just cried and cried and cried myself to sleep. And that night, I woke up with a voice, and that voice said, "Julie, I love you." And that voice got louder and louder, and it said, "Julie, I love you." And I'd never heard voices before, but I knew that someone out there loved me. And all this hot love just came running through my body. And then when I was wide awake, it said, "Julie, I love you." And it was like pleading, "Believe me." And I believed that voice. I believed that voice more than the bed I was laying on, more than the hand in front of my face. I, to the depths of who I was, believed that someone out there loved me.
Mm-hmm. You didn't really know who he was, did you?
Didn't know who he was, but knew I could trust it. And for the next 2 years, I searched for God, but more than that, God searched for me. And I thought, I'm going to better myself. I'm going to stop sleeping with men. I'm going to stop doing any kind of drugs I'm involved in. I'm going to better myself. So I went to the University of Minnesota to get an education. And I was on the university campus, and I started, you know, walking from job to job. Even though my parents had lots of money, I had to support myself through school. And so I worked like three jobs, and I was always exhausted. But this girl started walking next to me, and she had like this glow about her. And she said, "Hi, my name's Michelle, and I'm a Christian." And I thought, oh, gag, I don't want to know who Christians are, because I'd had a lot of bad experiences with Christians. Because even if I said a little bit of my story, their eyes would glass over and they'd run away. But she was different.
Or condemn you.
Or condemn me.
So how did help you?
Michelle asked me to Bible study that night, and I'm thinking, oh, gag, I do not want to study the Bible. Because I had had these people, like you said, Dr. Dobson, that had condemned me. But I wanted to be with her, and I wanted to experience what she was experiencing. So I walk across campus in my halter top and my tight jeans and open the door to this Bible study, and oh, my gosh. I had never seen anything like that before. Men and women were hugging each other, and there was love there, and it wasn't sexual. It was just this love that I was so drawn to that love. So that night, they spoke of the love of God, and they said this term, born again, which I know it gets thrown out around a lot, but that was the best news ever, that I could start all over. I could be born again. That's why I wanted to commit suicide, because I wanted to start over. Yeah. But I didn't have to die to start over. I could accept Christ, and I could have this relationship with God. And they talked about that, and they talked about how Christ got on that cross and died for me. And I knew that right then. I knew that was the most true thing I had ever heard.
How beautiful.
Did you pray? Did you try to reach out to the Lord?
Yes, that night I became a Christian. And they got so excited, and they were saying all these strange things like, oh, you know, the angels in heaven are having a party. And I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. But, you know, that's a great question, Dr. Dobson. I felt like right there that a party started in me. And it started with the love of God. And that, I just went home that night. For the first time in 24 years, I didn't have nightmares. I slept peaceful, and I got up the next day, and I felt like a little kid. You know, I got up, and it's like, oh, my gosh, you know, the flowers are blooming. The grass is green. I had so seen everything black and white. I was just trying to survive. Like, when I became a Christian, everything became technicolor.
It wasn't psychedelic.
No, it wasn't. That's right. And I started skipping down the University of Minnesota campus and sang the only song I knew, Jesus Loves Me, because they had taught me that the night before. And I walked into this. I was so excited. I walked into this hamburger place where I had worked, and it was called Annie's Parlor. And I was the one that organize all the drug parties up to this point, you know? And so I go in and I start becoming this evangelist, and I probably had no idea what I was saying, but I was so excited, you know, and I started reaching out to the wait staff and, you know, God loves you, and you don't have to, you know, Liz, who, you know, was struggling with the lesbian lifestyle, you don't have to be gay because, you know, God gave you a healthy sexuality and you can be excited to be feminine, and just became this incredible, excited evangelist, and would get on the tables and start preaching to people.
I love it. I love it.
Isn't that incredible?
Wow, it is so wonderful to hear the joy and excitement in Julie's voice. Despite all the pain and trauma in her life, she was changed the moment Christ came into her heart. I'm Roger Marsh, and you've been listening to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, featuring one of our best of the best broadcasts from 2016. Our guest was Julie Woodley, and her story is nothing short of amazing. It is a powerful reminder that there is no pit so deep that God's love is not deeper still. So if you've ever thought that you were too broken for God to fix, or that your situation was hopeless, let me tell you, God's love can lift you up and fill you up with that same joy that Julie now exudes. If you want to talk to someone about receiving that love, you can call us at 877-732-6825, and we'll be happy to pray with you. Maybe you know someone who really needs to hear Julie's story, or maybe you missed part of day one or day two. If so, you can go to our website at drjamesdobson.org and download the program there. Or you can call 877-732-6825 to request a CD. You'll be blessed and encouraged by what you hear, and you'll be ready to join us again next time for the conclusion of Julie's story. And before we leave the air today, I want to remind you about a great opportunity for you to support Family Talk financially. Now until the end of the year, every dollar that you donate will be matched for twice the impact, and twice as many marriages and families will be helped. Donate online at drjamesdobson.org, or you can call us with your donation at 877-732-6825. Thanks so much for standing with us, and be sure to tune in again next time right here for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.
Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning into our program today. You may know that Family Talk is a listener-supported program, and we remain on the air by your generosity, literally. If you can help us financially, we would certainly appreciate it. God's blessings to you all.